welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts here, Dana Asban, here with my friend Chavruta and Gordon. Our daf today, Masecha Bava Metzia, daf Lamed Tet, page 39. Our Gemara continues its discussion about what to do about the property of captives. Again, I found this really just very chilling to read these dapim. And it in the middle of Amud Aleph, they have a series of rulings related to this. After we had a braisa yesterday, which I read, they finished their discussion of the braisa and they say the following: Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, Shavui Shanishba, if somebody was taken captive, Vihinach Kama Liksor, and he left standing grain that was ready to be reaped, Anavim Liksor, Tmarim Likdor, Zetim Limsok, grapes, dates, or olives that were ready to be harvested, Beit Din Yordin L'Nechasav, the Beit Din enters his property, Umami Din Apitropos, and then appoints an administrator, right? And that's an apitropos is specifically somebody who's not related to the owner, V'kotzer Ubotzer V'goder Umosek, and he harvests all of the ripe crops. Each of those is a verb, you know, for how you harvest specifically grain, grapes, dates or olives. And then afterwards, the Beit Din puts in a relative, right, and into the property, right, and he would be paid basically like a sharecropper, and then he would cultivate the land, right? So the idea is the harvesting is taken care of by the Beit Din, but future cultivation of the land and planting would be taken care of by a relative. Now, the Gemara says here, V'lokim apitropa le'olam, right? But why doesn't the Beit Din just like appoint a permanent administrator? Why, you know, and they'll also take care of, you know, replanting the land and making sure that it's okay. So the Gemara answers, apitropa l'diknane lo mukminan. We do not appoint an administrator for bearded people. That means an adult. So usually what we've seen the term of apitropa before is usually in the context of like yitomim, in the context of orphans who have property that needs to be managed. And there becomes this court-appointed administrator. And actually, we've mentioned this before on the podcast, that's actually the Israeli word, the Hebrew word, excuse me, that's used for like a guardian, you know, is that word that we have from the Gemara. But basically the idea is that you don't really need one. We're not going to get an administrator for an adult person's property, maybe because Rashi says, maybe because it's hard to find somebody who wants to do that. But at least for the harvesting, okay, we are going to appoint somebody. Then the Gemara goes on to say, I'm a Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, Ein Moridin Katan L'Nechisei Shavui. A Beit Din doesn't install a minor in a captive's property. V'lo Karov L'Nechasei Katan. Nor does it install a relative in a minor's property. Meaning, let's say we have a relative who's a minor's heir, who inherits an estate of a different relative, right? So a minor inherits, you know, their father's property. They have a relative who would also be an heir of that minor, okay? What we're nervous is we don't appoint a relative because we're worried that relative actually could take his property. So v'lo karo machma krov l'nichasei katan. We also don't install a relative's relatives in a minor's property either, okay? The same idea is that he could somehow sort of claim that property. And I think we talked about this yesterday, that some of what's like a little disturbing about all of this is that it doesn't assume the best of people, right? Some of who we appoint and how we appoint and when we appoint has to do with making sure that somebody doesn't take advantage of the situation. And I guess that's what the court is there to do, is to protect, but it is a little disappointing to think that that's something we have to worry about. So the Gemara goes on to explain Rav Huna, the Beit Din doesn't install a minor in a captive's property. Dilma mafsi luhu, perhaps he will ruin it. V'lo karov machma karov l'nechasei katan. The Beit Din also doesn't install a relative's relative in a minor's property. Ba'achai me'ima, right, when he is a maternal brother of the minor's relative. V'lo karov l'nechasei katan, right, and the Beit Din also doesn't install relative in a minor's property. Kevan de lo mache, for, you know, because the child does not know to protest a false claim. Ati l'achzuke bay. The relative will come to possess the property, right? So basically they're explaining, the reason why Rav Huna said this is there's all these scenarios here where we worry the minor's property is not going to be treated the way that it should be. And therefore, having a relative is not the right way to go. So Rava from this says the following. Amar Rava, Shma Mina Mida Rav Huna. So what can we learn from Rav Huna that says we don't appoint relatives in these situations? Ein machzikim b'nichnasei katan. One cannot possess a minor's property. In other words, you can't ever take ownership of a minor's property. Bafil higdil, even if the child becomes, you know, becomes an adult, right, afterwards. In other words, even if the property is occupied for 3 years after the child came of age, and then the person who occupied it could say, well, the child sold me the property after they became an adult, it's still not considered to be a valid chazakah. And we've learned this before, that a chazakah would be that you've been on the land for 3 years. V'lo amran ela, and we have not stated Rav Huna's law, right? Only for what? Ba'achai da'aba, regarding paternal brothers of the child, who could also claim the administered land as their own inheritance. Aba ba'achai da'ima, however, regarding maternal brothers, because remember, maternal brothers cannot inherit that land. Leis la'ban, we have no concern about their appointment. And even in the case of paternal brothers, we said this law only in regards to minors' fields. But when it comes to buildings, we also don't have a concern about the paternal brother, right? So we only are concerned about somebody who could actually take the land and make a claim in the land. But the maternal brother has no right to that land because, remember, inheritance goes through the father. And even with a minor's field, we said this when, right? If a document drafted when the state was divided, but if a document of partition was drafted, right, to basically say what part each recipient, which heir got of the estate, kala isla, it has a voice. In other words, there's a public record of who owns what. There's a paper trail. So we don't have to worry about it. So then the Gemara says, Velohi. No, that's not true. Loshna chai d'aba, Veloshna chai d'ima. So the Gemara now retracts all of these qualifications and says there's no difference between paternal brothers and maternal brothers. Loshna ratav loshna bate. There's no difference between fields and buildings. Veloshna avid idata, loshna lo avid idata. There's no difference whether there's a document of partition or there isn't one. Lo michtinan. Right? Under all these circumstances, we don't allow a relative to enter a minor's property. So it's funny, like on the one hand, the Gemara comes and almost reverses. I mean, it overly qualifies everything about Rav Huna. And then all of a sudden, it says, no. Like what Rav Huna said stands, we don't appoint a relative. There's no qualification. There's no case. And I think the point is that, you know, this case of a minor, they're really at risk for being taken advantage of. And, you know, you always hear those stories. I'm thinking more, Anne, of like, you know, celebrity children, like where you find out like their parents stole all their money or something like that. It's depressing that we have to worry about it, but I think it is a real worry.
I think it's one of those, you know, again, we get to see where the Gemara is realistic about the foibles of human nature and the corruption and wrongdoing that can come into play. Speaking of which, I'm going to jump onto Ahmed Bet. We've got a story here. It's a piece of Agadata, but it's very illustrative. It illustrates, there we go, these kinds of halachot. Ahi Safta, da Havila Tlat Banata. There's an old woman, Safta, grandma, right? She had three daughters. Ishtabai ihi v'chara barata. Okay, so it's not an easy piece because, again, she and one of the daughters are taken captive. As we said yesterday, this is just a difficult couple of dapim here in terms of current events. Idach tarte banta shechiva chada minayu v'shvaka yenuka. So of the other two daughters, one died and left behind a son who was a minor. Okay, so now we've got our setting, so to speak. Amar Abaye, Hechi Navi. So Abaye says, what are we going to do with the property of this woman, right? She's in captivity. One of the daughters is in captivity. One of the daughters has died, and the heir to that daughter is a minor. It happens to be he's male, but also he's a minor. Lukimna lenichas bieda da'achta, dil mashchiva safta, ve'ein moridin karov v'nechse katan. So the suggestion is, he says, if you want to say, right, if you want to suggest that we can establish this property to the surviving sister, meaning not the mother of the boy, that woman died, but the one sister who's, you know, free and theoretically anyway available, that's problematic. Why? Because in the event that the woman died, the old woman died in captivity or were to come to die in captivity, then the minor would end up inheriting one third of her property. And we don't end up, the court doesn't say that some other relative can come along to manage that property of the minor. Meaning there's a difference in inheritance if the woman, if the old woman's, if her, let's say her heirs would be her daughters or some combination of her daughters, and now it's going to the next generation, to the katan, to the minor. That's different than if the entirety of the property is in the hands of the sister, and then the laws of inheritance of this woman, meaning the younger woman, would be just different to begin with. And that's part of the concern here. So the Gemara goes on, Nukimna l'nichse b'yadad yenuka, dilma lo shchiva safta, ve'ein mori din katan l'nichse shavui. Right? So then the Gemara says, well, let's look at it this way then. Well, again, it's still, we're all just suggesting cases now, suggesting possible solutions, right? That you could put the property in the possession of the minor. Now, that's going to be problematic on the face of it, right? That is not even hard to figure out why it's problematic. First of all, the kid is a kid. He's a minor. He doesn't really have the rights to ownership in the same way. And then there's a concern that what would happen if the woman, the Safta woman, the old woman, does not die? And in that case, the court does not give any authorization for a minor to come manage the property of somebody who's in captivity. So it seems to me that Abaye has kind of set up like the least likely potential solutions so that we can then knock them down and say, these are not good ideas. So now Abaye says, Amar Abaye, Hilkach palga yahivina la lachta, ve'idach palga mukimna le apotropa. Apotropa Yanuka. So Abaye says, here's what we're going to do instead, right? Half of the property should go to the surviving sister who's not in captivity. Then in the event that the captives would die, God forbid, right? She is the heir to half the property. And if they're alive, well, then she can manage the property of a captive. Like that's part of the deal of being that relative, right? On the other hand, the other half of the property is going to be put in the hands of a guardian, some kind of apotropos, you know, a guardian, let's call this a guardian, not the regular shomer though, right? This is specifically somebody who's established in it as to be the authority of responsibility for the minor. And then in the event that he would, you know, inherit the property, so then he will, meaning down the road. Rava Amar, migod mukimna apotropa lepalga, mukimna le apotropa leidach palga. Rava says to Abaye, hey, once we're already appointing an apotropos for the half of the property, then we can appoint a custodian also for the other half of the property, right? Meaning, and then you just hold on to it in the hands of the apotropos until you know what the status is of the captives. Lesof, at the end, and this is not a joyous story here, Lesof, Shema'u, Deskriva, Safta, the old woman dies. Amar Abaye, Tilti, Yehavina, La'achta. So, we don't know what happened to the daughter who was in captivity. So Abaye says we're going to give one third of the property to the daughter who's surviving, and we give one third of the property to the minor, right? Yehivin la achta v'tilta yehivin la liyunuka ve'idach tilta yehivin la danka lachta ve'idach danka mukimim la apotropa liyunuka. One third goes to the surviving daughter. One third goes to the minor, the grandson. Because he's going to inherit from his grandmother, right? And then the other third, which theoretically really belongs, or tachlis, practically speaking, really belongs to the sister who's in captivity that we don't know what happened to her, a sixth of that goes to the surviving sister. And the other sixth we give an apotropos on behalf of the minor in case that sister has also died. Rava Amar, Migoda, Mukima apotropali ledanka mukima nami apotropali idach danka. So Rava says, well, once you're putting a steward, you know, this custodian over 1/6 of the property, we're also going to apply, you know, we're going to put a custodian, an apotropos, over the other 6 remaining, right? Until we find out what's happening with the captive sister so that we can know what's happening with that third that really belongs to her. Now, this again feels kind of like mathematical as opposed to like where's the, I don't know what, emotion, sensitivity, something with regard to this particular story. It seems very difficult to me. And I think that that's part of the, you know, we've been talking about this now for a couple of days. The question is, how does the Gemara come to handle these very difficult situations, and to what extent and when were they theoretical? And when were they, you know, so real that they could only focus on the practical, because there's not too much else to say because it's just that hard.
I'm more taken by that, like, these are not theoretical scenarios. Like, this obviously was like a real issue that happened. And, you know, like halakha that they really had to deal with. I mean, this is something we've always talked about. When do they bring a scenario that has cases, and when they bring a scenario that doesn't have cases? And there's been a lot of cases on these last two topics.
Right. Right. And I keep thinking, you know, I was suggesting when we first entered the conversation about the captives that maybe this was, they were so matter of fact about it because they weren't dealing with as much reality as we might have thought, we might have guessed. And I think that you're right. I think that the real life cases here, you know, we have details. It's an older woman with 3 daughters, one of whom has a son, right? That's not made up. If we're going to be made up, we'd have all the permutations of all the different ways that could go down.
Well, that's our DAP discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this stuff on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.